Welcome to Think Oral,
where we connect the unconnected between oral and physical health.
I'm your host, Dr. Jonathan Levine.
And I'm your host, Maria Filipova.
Let's get at it.
Jonathan, excited about today. I still remember when the first time you and I were talking about the podcast and I was asking you, why are we doing this? And your answer was, we've got $1 trillion healthcare spending. We're spending it in all the wrong places, in all the most ineffective ways as a clinician. And I shared your frustration. I was like, you know, as a business person, if we could design the most ineffective, expensive system, that would be it. So excited about today's conversation, huh?
I really am. Also, you know, as we know, we always say the healthcare system is so siloed. It's siloed within medicine. It's siloed within dentistry. And it's siloed across dentistry and medicine and back again. And what does that really mean? At the end of the day, people are talking to each other and they're not figuring out how do we communicate, use technology, and literally build some new business models to drive efficiency in the healthcare industry. We got to get upstream more to the early days before these diseases spin out of control and get so expensive.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because you said innovate on the business model. It's so interesting how people and entrepreneurs these days are very quick to reach for the AI model, the ChatGPT, pick your technology and say, I'm just going to have a technology solution. And our guest today will show us that sometimes you could innovate on the business model and go back to common sense solutions, delivering value to the right people, all the right stakeholders. And frankly, you could do that by allowing clinicians and ED doctors to practice at the top of their license and balance their life and demonstrate savings. Money talks. You don't need technology when you're adding real value and people can see the savings.
Exactly right. You know, the focus, neuro focus, primary cannot just be technology. You really got to be thinking, what are the problems that we're solving? What are those pain points? And in healthcare, there are numerous ones because our overall focus, as we always talk about, is a sickness model. Everybody talks about it. And if the insurance companies are incentivized to pay for things way downstream where it's costing tens of thousands of dollars, instead of going more to that preventable early stage of disease, root causes of disease, unless they go there, we're just going to continue to have this runaway train. So who do we have on this podcast that has innovated a tremendous solution?
We have an ED doctor, right? A father of two, a fellow troublemaker, like the two of us.
Yes.
A visionary and an entrepreneur who not only built a company that is based on value first, clinical delivery outcomes first, technology second, but also somebody who is the definition of exponential scale, right? And who is doing some pretty crazy things like 6xing his pricing for his customers and their customers are still staying with him. So
amazing. Well, let's go after it. I'm so excited for this podcast. I know it is going to be one of my favorite ones. Let's go.
Let's get to it. I couldn't be happier to welcome Dr. Lizardo to our call and our conversation today. Ramon, welcome.
Hey, happy to be here, honestly. Excited about this podcast and excited about this conversation.
I think I'm very excited to have you. Can't wait to tell us about your company, but let me just give our audience a bit more information on who you are. And we love teeing this up, the conversation at the beginning. So you lead a company called Tele911. It's a nationwide initiative that connects patients who call 911 with board-certified emergency physicians in less than 40 seconds. This is an amazing opportunity to triage, to have more effective response. But you're also a board advisor and a board member to companies like Different Kind and Paired Health. And both of these companies are getting at how do we get dental and emergency care services more effectively. We're very excited to have you because you are a visionary leader. You are also a doer. You are a fellow troublemaker for good. With that, now I'm going to pass it on to you. And so please tell us about Tele911 and what the origin story. What prompted you to start a company, and how are you bridging that medical dental divide with it?
Absolutely. And I think that the storm really starts with a 20-year-old recent grad from undergrad. I went to Rutgers University, went to medical school the next day. And by 24, I was a doctor. But I always say I became a doctor to meet my wife. My day. But one of the things that going into emergency medicine would really highlight was to see the amount of primary care that we were experiencing in the ED. I got really lucky and worked really hard, joined a few companies that eventually exited. So joined the right companies at the right time when we were able to scale them successfully. But again, I remember certain instances, particularly being a young doctor, of these patients coming into the ED because of dental care. Something that we grew up getting regularly at one of the dentists every 6 months, and seeing that they had not gone to the dentist for years. And they're walking to the ED because of a release of pain. So tell them what actually comes out of a concept. About 7 or 8 years ago, I was at a medical conference over in North Carolina, and I was eating Bojangles, by the way, and I was dipping the fries in the chicken grease, and I cleaned the napkin off, and on the back of the napkin, I was like, what if people call 911, and instead of being taken to the hospital, they would see a doctor there? This is before Zoom. And this is before, like, video calls were even popular, right? But I knew that this concept should exist, right? And then what happened over the next few years is just that journey of trying to get this off and multiple attempts of failure over and over again. And then the pandemic hit, and what used to be impossible became normal. The industry was trying to push for telemedicine for 20 years. And in 2 weeks, people were like, yep, this is what we're going to do. And I knew it was the right time for a company like Tele1M1 to come along. And since then, this is what Tele1M1 does, and this is what we've become. That idea that was scribbled in the back of the greasy napkin. Now, if you call 911 in key cities in California, Texas, Florida, and respectively Maryland, 1% of the U.S. population, currently about 5 million lives, has access to this, where you call 911, the ambulance comes to your house, as they regularly do in about 8 to 10 minutes, but instead of taking you to the hospital, they virtually bring a doctor on site within 40 seconds of activating Tele911. And that has been revolutionary. Because what used to be, the process was, you used to be taken to the hospital, waited for hours, and sometimes not even see a doctor, right? What we did is we basically wanted the real emergencies to go to the hospital. And we basically brought the doctor truly to the home, the board-certified emergency medicine doctor. And this concept was launched last year. We thought, hey, maybe we could do this a few hundred times. And within a few months, we were doing this by the thousands. And now we cover almost 5 million lives, and we're tracking towards 35 million lives. And we have a 2-year wait list. So this company that now sees patients from 60 health plans in and out of network has revolutionized the space. But the reason why I wanted to come to the podcast and have this conversation is because between 3% and 5% of the calls to call 911, it's become a dental, quote unquote, emergency. Not really an emergency. It's basically a delay in care. And these patients are thinking, hey, I'm in so much pain. I cannot afford to go to a dentist. Or my dentist doesn't have an appointment for a long time. Or I'm in so much pain. Or I have an infection and I need care now. They're thinking the best way to get care fast, it's not by going into the hospital. They're thinking, I need care fast, and what I have is a phone, and I'm going to call 911, and the ambulance is going to come. And what we've done is we basically trained our doctor to understand that this is a subset of these cases. And now we're training the doctor to understand that this is basically become part of a protocol. The same attention that you would give over in the ED, you're actually able to give it virtually with the camera. Whether it's pain meds or antibiotics to avoid progression, things like that. But what we want to recognize is oral health is critical to emergency medicine. Yes. Because it's a large subset. Millions of patients are actually doing this. And now that I'm looking at
6 billion patients, to be exact, 76 million patients do not have dental insurance. And for them, delaying care is the only way.
Absolutely. Let's add to that number. So 76 million patients don't have dental insurance. The majority of the U.S. population has Medicaid and Medicare. And most dentists do not take insurance. So they don't have a viable path to actually take care of their oral health. So when they're calling them once still with insurance, they're still expecting some sort of relief. So the insurance part doesn't provide the relief.
No.
It's actually what we need to do is build the right pathways and the doors for these patients to be able to walk through the door, because this is part of whole patient care.
Yes. And if I could just jump in as a dental professional, the problem also that you're facing, you have the telemed call, but let's say the patient has a space infection. And in other words, dental decay, endodontic treatment necessary, couldn't afford it, didn't go. Now we have inflammation at the periapical area of the root, and now we have inflammation and starting a cellulitis. Now, I'm describing a life-threatening situation. What has happened traditionally is you go into the emergency room and there's nobody to treat that person short of an antibiotic or a pain med. And I know you have a solution to this. And I think this is so groundbreaking because you're going to connect the dots here. Please tell all of us about it.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I help insurers understand is the things that are happening in the mouth affect value-based care as I think you just want to throw a pathway of something that started small, doesn't get taken care of. Now the patient's calling 911. Now they're going to the hospital. Now they're having a complication. Now it becomes not just a mouth situation, it becomes a whole body. And sometimes think about some of these infections that can go all the way to the heart. Now we're talking about a cardiac patient, right? And then my responsibility is, since what we do is the first time in history, this company is changing the paradigm of the lines of healthcare. It's also changing the paradigm of how they're connecting the dots at the health plan. And my responsibility is basically to help the health plans understand, hey, something that happens this small, if we don't take care of it now, this is going to turn into a very expensive ER visit within 30 days, right? So either we treat it now, create a tangible pathway to treat it now, or expect the bill in 30 days, because this patient eventually is going to end, right? And these are the kind of preventative measures that feel like not only as government, but above all, as private insurers, you need to invest in this. Let's not wait until this gets to a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 hospital bill when it can spend $600 on the patient and address it. You're going to meet
your
pension. Yeah. These insurance.
Put that on shirts, on t-shirts, and the ED. And it's interesting because you could tell, Ramon, that this topic is near and dear to us, and we've been looking at the numbers. We know that actually the average cost per ED visit for non-traumatic oral related case is increasing, to your point. And by the time you get to the ED, Jonathan is right, it's too late, right? Because the ED cannot treat. They couldn't give you a root canal or do an extraction. Most EDs don't have a dentist at the ED. And so going to the emergency room is the most expensive, least effective way to treat oral health issues, because you could, best case scenario, get antibiotics. Worst case scenario, get opioids. 1 in 7 opioids get prescribed in the ED for oral health related issues.
Yeah.
And we have to avoid by the time we get to the ED, it's too late. Going back to that example, I'm having pain. I think it's life-threatening. I'm picking up the phone. I'm calling 911. Somebody's at my home triaging me with tele 911. How many cases that you receive make it to the emergency room versus you reroute somewhere to a specialist, including a dental office?
That's a really good question. First, let me report back to the first part of your question, because I think it's critical in order for us to be able to quantify this. So let me pick a random state, California. Just so we know, let's say a patient has an infection or a toothache.
Yeah.
When they call 911 and it's a private ambulance company, that bill alone is $6,300 to take it to the hospital. Yes, I said.
That's an expensive Uber ride. That's a very expensive Uber ride.
Super expensive Uber ride, right? $6,300. We're not counting then the $3,000 facility fee plus the things that are going to happen at the hospital, which honestly, not much is going to happen at the hospital. Matter of fact, I remember being an intern and saying, I'm not a dentist. Well, how much can I do? So when we quantify, this is a very expensive override without any tangible outcome, but quick relief for the patient, right? There are no dentists in the ED. And the people that work in the ED, like myself, took one class in anatomy that included teeth your very first semester and never saw it again. Just let you know, that's as far as dentistry goes for MDs who work in an ED, right? When I looked at the data, just and as I mentioned before, telling what does this sound with time, but for every 1,000 patients, consider 3 to 5% are dental related, right? Now, we have a success rate of almost 80% of these patients are diagnosed, basically treated at home, right? A subset of those patients are actually, of the patients that are not treated at home, they're basically sent over to a network facility, right? So what we do is basically we want them to go to a center. We do not want to send you to a general hospital where we know there's a cardiac case and you've been treated for a heart transplant at XL, right? That's our responsibility basically to own the pipes. And what we're doing now is we're figuring out which are the pathways that we can walk in patients were calling for this 3 to 5%. Now think about it. We're on track for 35 million lives. 3 to 5% of that, it's a lot. And trust me, unless you deal with it, they will call you again. So what we're doing is creating the pathway where we can hold their hands into an appointment with an in-network facility that's covered by their insurance. Why is this important? Because now someone called 911, our doctors are able to prescribe something for the instant relief that they need, whether it's the infection or the pain. But also now there's a next step of, oh, wait, there's a follow-up appointment that's going to be set up here where I'm going to basically be taken care of within my network of insurance for good. And that's what's key part of this conversation. On top of that, our doctors then are basically covering this patient until that visit. Let's say you run out of script or you need a follow-up with your infection. We're taking care of you all that way. Yeah. So what we don't want is for them to call 911 again, right? What we want is to hold the patient's hand until they get the appropriate care. And that happens, that is for oral, when it happens just across all pathophysiologies that we're connected.
Just speechless.
Yeah, does it make a lot of sense?
And just, I can't believe
like this
tell
lady.
Me about your dental school experience. I can't believe that now it's the same thing on the medical side. What was your dental school experience like in terms of getting medical anatomy incorporated into your dental curriculum?
Yeah, I was fortunate at Boston University Goldman School. The first 2 years you're in medical school, so I had full body anatomy. I had a lot of medical, and I have a microbiology immunology background from Cornell. For me, diving into the microbiome of the mouth and understanding the connection of oral health and oral health and the inflammatory process, I'm very interested in that because, as Mary Otto said in her book, the mouth is connected to the rest of the body. We all know that. What I love what you're doing is you're taking a practical approach to a very major issue, and you're really going upstream and saving the healthcare industry. Really, when you look at those numbers, as you grow to your subscriber base, you're 35 million plus, and it will be millions and millions of dollars. As you think out a little bit, how do you see scaling it and creating a greater level of effectiveness? Is your call center, and if I can call it a call center, but your board certified professionals also inclusive of dental professionals? And do you connect the dots if a patient doesn't have insurance or maybe can get Medicaid? How do you close all of those potential loops as you're evolving as a young company?
Absolutely. That's a really good question. But first, let me walk you through how we built this division, because I think it's going to highlight the power behind it. When I was getting started with TON-M1, we started TON-M1 at a point where 50% of emergency medicine residencies were unfilled. Post-pandemic, nobody wanted to work in emergency medicine. And we realized I wanted to provide the best care. The mission of the company is we want to democratize access to the best care as fast as possible within an ambulance call. But I was on a losing ground because people were leaving. And my wife, she's an OBGYN. And when we were during the pandemic, we basically had to take turns between working and taking care of the kids. And then post-pandemic, she said, I would like to take some time and raise our two-year-old. But then she said, it's so unfair that people who choose to take care of the kids can't go to work, can't work within certain specialties. And I said, yeah, let's do something about that. Virtual emergency medicine is only practiced in person at the hospital. Till telling them what came about. And we created a new fellowship that allowed people to practice virtual emergency medicine.
Wow.
And we told their friends, and their friends told their friends. And when I tell you that within 3 weeks, moms and dads who were staying at home started showing up in droves with their kids on their hips to the interviews, saying, this is what life looks like for me after I spent 12 years going to school, but I only have this time to have a baby and I want to practice what I can. How can we do this? And they were like, my kid takes a 2-hour nap and I sign up for a shift there. And I said, yes, my kid sleeps during this time or my kid's in school during this time for 4 hours. Can I do this? Yes. And we said yes and yes. And what happened is we ended up building the largest virtual emergency medicine practice in the entire United States simply by saying yes to parents. And that changed the game forever. At another layer to that, right? We were writing fellowship, right? We were writing what this looked like, which in an extent is extremely dangerous, but in another extent, it's amazingly innovative. Having doctors practice with someone else be their hands in years, right? Having someone else on a screen do an EKG and say, let me see it. That's new, right? For emergency medicine. And what we did is we got really good at it. Because we started doing this thousands of times. And then to add another layer to that, we started doing unconventional. Hey, I need a picture of the full oral. I want to make sure that I'm able to see the infected site. Because remember, we are the doctors in this case. And our doctor's trying to, we basically need protocols for this. Now, there are things that are outside of Burski. And what we did is we started figuring out what companies do we partner on. Since insurances, by the way, we take patients from almost 60 insurances in and out of network. Mm-hmm. And it was their interest. They started coming to us, getting on our wait list and saying, hey, how can we work with you with these initiatives? Can I give you a list of my in-network? And by doing so, we basically became really strong pipes.
Wow.
Really strong partners. To the point now that we now can leverage higher payment for these doctors that are taking care of these patients. So the ones that, remember at the beginning of the call, these doctors don't want to take Medicaid and Medicare. Now they do when it's through Tele-911 because they know they're going to be paid a premium for it. And insurances are willing to pay a premium because they know these are high-cost patients.
So you would get Medicaid patients higher rates.
Correct.
Then, and that's a CMS negotiated contract?
So it depends for Medicaid Advantage. It depends on the insurance that's basically doing managed Medicaid at this point. So yeah, it's part of the negotiating power that we have, right? 60% of our patients are either in a bundled rate or eligible to a bundled rate. And we now, since we're the pipes and the insurances have to contract with us, we have to negotiate, which is
You're also proving nightly to the insurance companies that you're saving them those dollars by
being
preventable and not waiting for the $35,000-$40,000 visit when things have spun out of control.
They love me because I proved them that they're able to save 60%, man. The only people that hate me, I'm the number one most hated executive among this hospital executive. Because they figured out wherever hype goes, the patients aren't walking through their door.
Patients are not going anywhere, though. There's so many people, high utilizers of ED.
Yeah, that's true.
Unfortunately, there's so many other areas other people are keeping EDs busy. And
Maria, that's why they're calling it the troublemaker. That's exactly what
you have.
He's creating a more efficient system.
Yeah. I'm happy to do it, by the way. Honestly, it's just, yeah, I tell people I saw three things that are key in my lifetime. The first one is I solved the issue for real emergencies going into the hospital, because all the low emergencies were basically holding up the cardiac arrest that were calling, and they were like, actually, we got to put you on hold. You were taking a paper cut. So I solved that for the EMS and the ambulance industry. I then went and saw for the health plan industry, this all plans are about 80% utilization management. They're just trying to control costs. And now they look at me and they're like, actually, you have the front door. So they're very happy. But the number one thing that I also saw was medical debt. The number one reason why people are going into into debt in the United States, bankrupt in the United States, because of medical debt. And the number one reason attached to this is because they go to the hospital. And now there's a better way. And by building a company like Telenet1, we literally solve problems.
So, and you did this in barely 2 years. How many years have you guys been?
That we've actually been commercial now for 18 months. I do want to say this. You know how I think it was Jordan that was like, it took me 23 years and coming overnight success. We tried this so many times to the point that I was at one of giving up. Remember, 7 years before launching, this was an idea on the back of a greasy napkin.
Yeah.
I tried it multiple times. But when I tried it and it was the right time, it worked so good. Think about it. Our goal was to get 300 patients to see if this idea worked. Now we're like, oh yeah, that's the next few hours. Okay, that's nothing. Within a few first months, we were like, this is insane. We're doing this by the thousands. It really has changed the way the health industry actually works. So think about every elderly health plan, but think about every risk-bearing entity, the IDORS, the OAP, the Privius, the LNA, to build businesses upon keeping people out of the hospital, but never figured it out. And I'm saying, hey, they're walking through my door. What do you want me to do? But I think there has also been a huge power shift where it's now we are negotiating for the right of the people to get the risk.
It's what an inspiration. So if there are other, and then we have both of you entrepreneurs here, if you could distill what it takes to, this is every entrepreneur's dream story, right? Find a problem that's so painful for so many people, find a credible enough solution, sells itself practically, and be the first one to do it. What you have is not a technology advantage. You don't have you don't use blockchain, quantum computing, ChatGPT, or any of the cool buzzwords of the day, but truly adding value to so many people in the systems. If you could just now, with the benefit of looking back, what would you identify as the key decisions that you made that are getting you to that exponential part of the growth curve right now?
Anyone who has a conversation like me understands that there's a concept that I apply to everything. And it's called repeatable, monetizable, and scale. Okay? Those three things. I'm a kidnapper street. I'll eat the same thing every day, go out at the same time, to the T, right? But along the way, that's been how I build and scale and run companies. And you said, I do think that's been a shining light in my trajectory of success. But when I think about myself in this moment, what is driving me to do this right now? And I remind people, what made me leave emergency medicine was the fact that it was primary care. And the fact that I was like, man, this sucks. I hate what I signed up for. You sign up for action and you get a lot of disappointment. And I realized I had to do something about it. And I ended up building this wild thing, really, that fueled by the stories that I hear on the other line. Just so you know, I'm the CEO that gets up and actually calls patients to hear about their journey and their story. It's part of me. It's part of what fuels me. It's something that I need to hear. As a matter of fact, there was a lady the other day that I called, and she was like, oh my God, thank you so much. And it's the first time. And she was just so grateful, right? And we shared stories. And then at the end, she said, I just have one question. What's a CEO? And I told her, that just means I work for you. Right? That's my responsibility. But when I hear these stories, that's what fuels me. These people need care. We became clinicians because we wanted to help people that needed care, right? And I'm able to do that at a massive scale, right? So I'm pushing for this because it's changing the way healthcare is being delivered. This is rewriting history for something that's been done the same way for 60 years. And there's still a couple of points, even when my kids are going to be like, hey, yeah, that was innovative, but that's an old invention. But I want them to say, actually, my dad was part of that revolution, right? That changed the way healthcare was delivered. I'm incredibly excited and thankful, but I'm fueled by these stories that I hear on the other
side. The industry is so riddled with compromises. And you, as your background as an emergency room physician, you saw firsthand what those compromises were all about, the inefficiencies, the wasted dollars, the missed expectations on both sides of the coin. I'm so impressed with the first company that you really went after the provider side and you figured out a solution when it was in the time of COVID. And then you went over to the patient side, and also COVID gave that acceleration effect where the timing is started to make real sense, because before that, yeah, why do I need telemedicine or even teledentistry back then? It's very impressive to look at how quickly you're scaling. If you had a look out future, let's go another 18 to 24 months, tell us, where are you?
Yeah, we're happy to announce the legislation was passed in Maryland, now covering every single patient that calls 911 and goes through telemedicine. That's in Medicaid. It's the first time in history that's been done. That's going to be launching in 6 weeks. The legislation was passed about, say, 2 or 3 months ago. It was one of the most monumental things that's been part of our story. This is funny because Maryland, the state hall, said, hey, can we try something like that? We heard about this in California. And I said, well, yeah, it's going to take 2 years to pass legislation. And just to see that, this goes to show how fast government's willing to move when they see something good. But there are also 4 additional states that are on the wait. Telemedicine has a wait of about 2 years and over 30 million lives. If that comes away, if we do nothing and just support what we have right now, we'll hit our goal. That's what's fascinating.
And Ramon, what's the bottleneck? More clinicians? What do you need to open up the wait list?
Yeah, so right now, what we do is, remember, repeatable and fathomable scale. So what we do is we basically build a lead company that meets this threshold and expands. And that's what we do. We work with the payers, we work with the counties, and different benchmarks are set within the next few months. And as these states, new states will come on board. But we grow responsibly. I want to make sure that this is a company that, because of the critical part that this company does, this is a company that doesn't have the luxury to fail. Because failure means millions of lives lose coverage of healthcare, right? So my responsibility as a CEO is to grow this company in a way that's sustainable, long-term, and responsibly. Not fast, but right. In a way that's very sustainable. So that's what we're doing. And there are some states that are pushing us and saying, please do this now, kind of thing. And yeah, but we want to follow our protocol and do it correctly. That's one. And then two, we're always growing our practice in emergency medicine physician. Now we're going into the medical schools and teaching this as the future of our specialty. So it's an exciting time. I think we've reiterated emergency medicine because we've added a different flavor to our call.
Absolutely incredible. Ramon, I have a question for you as a fellow entrepreneur. Repeatable, monetizable, scalable. I'm feeling you got a book there. Great. That is a great 1, 2, 3 in all businesses. How do you think about building an enterprise that from the beginning is the vision is a cash flow positive business instead of going to more of a blitz scaling and constantly raising new dollars? How do you think of capitalizing your business and as a business builder?
I love this question. It's the number one question I get. And I tell a lot of people this because I think startups are building for it. I've been part of a few startups, a few exits. And I tell people the previous landscape of premium and No, what you want to do is build something that's so good that people are willing to pay you a premium for it. Just so you know, we went back to health plans and 7 to 9x our price point from last year. And yet still they say, we're still saving over 50%. So we're going to, but that's just a testament to the product. No, we literally did not add anything. We literally just told them, you want to continue to do this, this is how much it's going to cost. So when it comes to repeatable, monetizable, and scalable, here's how Telnet Mobile functions. 10% of our population that we see is uninsured. It's actually a gift back to society and an important component to be able to be agnostic to all payers, but also to all patients. We do not turn a patient down because they're uninsured. 911 doesn't do that, neither do we. Now, 30% of our business is government, Medicare, Medicaid. 60% of our business is in a bundled rate or eligible for a bundled rate. And what happens is those premium members actually pay for the 40%. And that allows us to continue to move forward in a sustainable way. As a matter of fact, we've been, just so you know, remember that number that I gave you about $6,500 for the ambulance and then $3,000 for hospital visit?
Yeah.
The Uber ride plus the facility fee. So we have this down to a size because we do it so much. So on average, each visit costs us about $60 to $70.
That's cheaper, at least 100x cheaper, yes.
Absolutely. And I say that, and I didn't tell the health plans. Now, then they go and debate me. They're like, yeah, you're going to charge $1,000 for this. And I'm like, sure. Do you want me to send them to the hospital so that you can get both $3,000? And then it gets really quiet. So we just have to play the game. But what I do let them know is, that doesn't go to me. We basically take a portion of that and actually give it back, right? So what we did is we built the right company with the right model and the right wheel that continues to turn.
I love it. Incredible. So amazing to have this practical wisdom, and it really translates to so many different arms of healthcare to create. How do we focus on innovation, which brings the efficiency and the operational excellence at the same time? Absolutely a change agent. Maria, thank you so much for bringing Ramon on our podcast.
Thank you for being a troublemaker in crime here. Partner troublemaker. I just can't think of how many companies I've talked to who have 6x their rates and kept all their customers.
And had a waitlist. But you know what? It's funny.
Are giving back. Very grateful. Thank you, Jonathan. Thanks, Ramon. To be continued. We can't wait to please share your success with us. And if there's anyone who wants to, from our listeners, who could be a partner or a customer, how could they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. So I want to encourage everyone that either is part of a large medical practice, particularly dental, that wants it, and it's in California, Texas, Florida, or Maryland right now, that is open to receiving patients that are calling 911, and we basically create a pathway for us booking them through you, and is willing to be included in our contract negotiations with the health plans, because we want you to get paid a premium. Please reach out to me directly at lizardo@telemedicine1.com, or feel free to go to our website, and there's a tab where you can contact our executive team, because we want to build this right, but we also understand, and this is the reason why I'm in this podcast, 3 to 5% of these 911 calls should be going to you. And you should be getting paid a premium for it. And that's why I'm here. I want to make sure that we're circling up with the right partners to ensure the best care for everyone.
Thank you again. We will take you up on the invitation, and we will include links to your email and the website in the podcast description. So thank you. Good luck and keep at it. That's the only thing we could say. Thank you again.
Thanks for listening to the Think Oral podcast.
For the show notes and resources from today's podcast,
visit us at www.outcomesrocket.health/thinkoral.
Or start a conversation with us on social media.
Until then, keep smiling
and connecting care.